Business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business Show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. It's just gone 9 minutes past 12. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Following hot on the heels of last week, where we really unpacked interest rates and what interest rates are all about and how they work and how they affect inflation, I've got so many questions coming through about interest rates when it comes to investments. I've got an investment in a fixed interest rate. I've got a 32-day call at the bank. I've got a one-year fixed deposit. What's about government bonds? What's about the R2030, etc., etc.? All these questions started coming through. So what I'm going to do today is do my best to unpack that all and to just give an idea about how the interest rates affect an investment. Is a lot of money or an amount of money held in interest rates actually considered an investment, or is it considered a savings? So let's go right back to the very beginning and let's unpack the scenarios and let's do our best to clarify a lot of the confusion that is out there. First of all, the old cliche that I've often used that I remember reading in university in a textbook somewhere, the difference between savings, investing, and gambling. The difference is risk. If you take savings, you put your money in the bank, you can ask the bank, what is the interest rate that I'm going to get on this money? In other words, if I put in 1,000 rand and I keep it there, let's say for a year, how much money will I have at the end? If you use simple figures like 10%, which is quite high in a decreasing interest rate market that we found ourselves in at present, you should make 100 rand on that 1,000 rand, put it simply. So the interest rate is 10%. The risk is zero. There is almost no chance of the bank going bankrupt, for example, and you losing your money, or the bank taking your money, or the bank not having the money available when you want it. You might not be able to access it within that period of a year, for example. But that is a low interest environment. Together with that security, the corollary of that is that there's a price to pay for it. And that price is that your interest rate tends to be lower than what you could get in an investment where a portion of that money was invested on the stock exchange. And that is the potential downside. But the upside is that you know what you're going to get. You know what the final figure is going to be. You can understand what your costs are. So if you take your capital that you put in, your 1,000 rand, you add on your interest return, you take away the cost that the bank might charge you for having that account or transacting on that account, or there might be no costs. You'll know what you're coming out with at the end. That's savings. Simple, secure, very little concern or worry. The only thing that you should be worried about is what we call opportunity cost. And now we go on to the second one, which is an investment. Investment very simply says, I want to put my money away. I want my money to work for me. And I'm prepared to expose my money to a certain amount of risk. Some people may be what we call risk adverse, and therefore they want a conservative investment. Some might be more risky, and they'd like to bring risk on in order to increase the opportunity for better returns over time, and they would be moderately aggressive or aggressive. But it is not unusual for an investment like that to show almost no return or even a negative return at some point, because if the markets turn, in other words, you've invested your money at a certain point in the market. For whatever reason, the market has gone backwards. Let's take two big examples that we can all relate to. One was Corona, like 3 years ago. And the other one was the big market depression that we had a couple of years before that. You would have put in R1 million, you would have looked the very next day, and it was worth below R700,000. You lost 30% of your money overnight. Before you freak out and fall off your chair, what you need to understand is that savvy investors said, oh, it's dropped by 30%. Let me put more money in. Let me see if I can even borrow money to put in, depending on what it costs to borrow that money, because they know that the markets are cyclical. Certain global and local elements affect the market positively or negatively, and the markets will rebound. But you have to be able to stomach that risk. If you are somebody who's relying on a return every year and you're taking out X amount of your money on a monthly basis, and the market goes negative for an extended period of time, 3 months, 6 months, you can really be hurt in that process. Whereas if you're in a savings account or a savings environment, that turn in the markets actually led to slightly lower interest rates in some cases, but you were still assured that the interest rates would not bottom out. You wouldn't go from 10% to 2% overnight or to 0%. You'd still be getting something. You might just have to tighten your belt for a period of time. And then when it comes to gambling, gambling is all about risk. You have absolutely no control on the outcome. Certain people do, by understanding the maths and the science behind certain card games. I'm the last person in the world who knows anything about that. But if you're someone who enjoys gambling, you need to appreciate that the money you're going to gamble is money that you can afford to lose. And I'm not talking about a lottery ticket. A lottery ticket is not gambling. Lottery ticket is putting your hopes on a dream. You spend R2.50, R10, R100, depending on your income bracket and what you can afford to lose, so to speak. And you just hope that something happens. If you win, great. If you don't win, well, you were expecting it and you shrug your shoulders and just walk away from the scenario. But coming back to savings and investments, that's what we're going to focus on today. So let's start unpacking the fixed interest rate scenario. The first thing is that it is a fixed rate of return. You know how much you're going to get. It is predictable and it's low risk. It's low risk because of the two factors above. It's fixed and it's predictable. Even if it's not fixed, but they do move with the interest rates as what we call it, the exchange, what we call movements in the interbank rate, the rate that banks lend to each other, and therefore it affects the prime interest rate. That will usually be by 0.25% or 0.5% at the most. Big movements are very uncommon and they happen gradually over time. Good examples of fixed interest rates are things like government bonds or corporate bonds, fixed deposits that you can get in the bank, and something called treasury bills. Now, these might sound very big and very complicated. The truth is that many of you somehow are invested in all these different types of product without you even knowing. Because by buying a low-risk interest unit trust, for example, you automatically have got your tentacles into these different types of things. But let's unpack them one by one and sort of understand what they are and how they work. A bond simply means that either the government or a big corporate company, in South Africa, we all know about government bonds. The government needs money. So one of the ways that they raise money is they go to you and I and say, if you give us X amount of money, we are going to give you a return over 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, depending on how long you put it in. And we, as the public, have a certain sense of security that because it's a government bond, our money is safe. They usually entice us by giving an interest rate higher than the prevailing interest rates at the bank. And you are guaranteed to get the capital plus the interest at the end of the term. little bit later on in the show, we'll talk about different types of government bonds, some that give you interest twice a year, some that accumulated and paid out at the end, and some where the interest rate actually moves. But the bottom line is that we as the public are able to buy government bonds in order to get a better return than we could get in the bank, usually, and we know that our money is safe. A fixed deposit is what you do when you go to the bank. Now, there's lots of terms going around as new and dynamic banks have emerged. Different terminology has come into play. But let's take a quick break. And when we come back, what I want to do is unpack the different products that a bank has for you to invest in. And then we'll go and we'll look at the different types of government bonds that are available in more detail. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. And just before we go to the interest rates, let me tell you about our incredible support that we get from Dis-Chem. And I think we should go and make sure that we support them in kind, because the Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage your health risks. Whether you're having a regular wellness check, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and most importantly, with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside a Dis-Chem pharmacy. Better health starts here with Dis-Chem. You've got money sitting in what we call a check account. Check account is also called a current account. The reason it's called a current account, because the money is current. It's there, it's available, it's moving in and out all the time. It's liquid. You don't earn any money on a positive balance. If you pay a fee to have that a bank account open. Some banks might not charge you. Some banks can charge up to 500-600 rand a month to have a bundled account, a current account, a credit card. But before you like gasp and say that is not fair and it's incorrect, you need to see the value that you're getting from joining that bank. It goes hand in hand. To have money in that account, for example, you earn 50,000 rand a month, your expenses are 20,000 rand, and you've just got this 30,000 rand building every single month. At the end of the year, you've got 720,000 rand that's just, 420,000 rand that's just sitting there. The question is, now what? You're not earning anything on that money. Your money needs to work for you. So the bank will often advise you, and I just want to say up front that I am not giving advice now. I am out there what products are available. Please speak to your bank or to your financial planner to get more current, accurate, up to date details that are really more appropriate to you. They might say to you, open up a money market account. In other words, move that money out of your current account, put it in a money market account that is designed to hold lump sum amounts. And the bank says, we'll give you a return on that money. We'll give you an interest rate, 5%, 6%, whatever it is. You'll find that within one bank, you might have two different accounts. The one might call it a money market. The other one might call it a money saver. But they might apply different interest rates if you have a balance over a certain amount. And there, what they're really doing is they're encouraging you to keep your money in the bank. They will pay you to keep it there, and you will be happy to keep it there because the money is growing and it's compounding on itself. But when you're going to fixed deposits, we're going to a different territory. Fixed deposit needs to have the mindset that you're putting money into an account and you're not going to touch it for a fixed period of time, be a year, 2 years, 3 years, up to 5 years. You're not going to touch that money. And that money is simply going to sit there and marinate, so to speak. I don't, just to use a very simple example, you know those little kids' toys where you put this little piece of rubber in the bath, and you come back an hour later and it's this massive frog that's filled up the whole bath? That's the concept of compounding interest in an account like that. You want to put the money in, you want the money to attract interest, and you want that interest to attract interest also. So it grows and grows and grows with the same low risk, low volatility, and very little headache on your money. Someone's just asked the question, which I was going to get to in terminology towards the end, but let me deal with it now. Somebody said to me, I keep hearing this term alpha. What are we talking about? Are there a pack of wolves in the bank? Okay, tongue in cheek, nice comment, but no, it's got nothing to do with a pack of wolves. And I get the innuendo, but let's talk about alpha. Alpha is often referred to what we call the risk-free rate. In other words, what is the prevailing interest rate that one can get? So we talk about positive alpha or above alpha and negative alpha or below alpha. You can also say above prime or below prime. Prime doesn't always relate to alpha because that can be slightly different, but alpha means what are you getting in the bank? So in other words, if bank A is offering you 8% for a 1-year fixed deposit, but bank B says we'll give you one positive or positive alpha of 0.5% on what you're currently getting, it's another 0.5% above the rate that you're getting. And if you've got something called zero alpha, it simply means you're working within the same band. So alpha just means a starting point, a benchmark, so to speak, because it gives you a point of being able to evaluate where you're going with the money, whether you're doing better or worse. It also gives you the ability to say, oh, I've taken on more risk. Remember in the beginning, we spoke about savings and investments. If you say, okay, my investment yielded 3 points positive of alpha. I took the risk and I went into a moderately conservative investment. And had I stayed in cash, I would have earned 8. I earned 11. In other words, you earned above the benchmark for cash. Maybe not about the benchmark for that particular investment, but you're saying to yourself, I took the risk, I walked out of my little square box of security, and I went there and I was lucky, not lucky, I took a calculated guess, and over time I've done better. So there's just able, it just gives you the idea of what you can get on alpha and then above and below it. That's really what it is. Somebody else is asking about beta. Beta is what is the performance is above. I really wouldn't worry about it. You're going to see beta sometimes on what we used to call fun fact sheets, on the sheet that you get from an investment company. It could say Allan Gray, Momentum, Sunland, Discovery, 91 on the top. You know, different funds, how they're made up, what they've returned 1, 3, and 5 years. Some companies give you every month in that year, which is actually quite nice to see. But they also tell you what is the benchmark for that investment. In other words, if you took a whole lot of funds that were equity funds, invested directly on the stock exchange in different categories, what would you expect to get? Or what did the peers get over a period? And how did yours compare? Was what we call first quartile, second, third, or fourth quartile? In other words, did it do really well compared to its peers? Or did it really lag compared to its peers? Okay. Let's get into the meat of it, and let's look at the South African government bonds. South African retail bonds give you fixed returns. So if you look at the current figures, you've got a 2-year fixed rate bond. The figure at the moment is 8.75%. A 3-year fixed rate bond, 9.25%, and the 5-year is 10%. Now, you say, I'm going to put my money away for 5 years and I'm going to get 10% on that. And now you go look and you say, but hold on, certain offshore funds have given me 21% just this year. Okay, go look what they've given over 3 years. Go look what they've given over 5 years. If you can predict what they're going to do for the next 5 years, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But one needs to see it over a period of time. And it all depends who you are what your tolerance for risk is and what your scenario for risk is. 10% in any market is a good return. In the South African market at current, it's very, very handsome. On the international market, it's almost unheard of as a fixed deposit. However, there are certain downsides, which I'm going to get to in a moment. But what are the factors that you need to take into consideration when you're thinking about this? To me, there are three vital things. Number one, how old are you? If you are 21 and you've got 200,000 rand, you don't need it for anything, and you know that 10% is a really good return, and it's unlikely that other interest rate accounts will do better over a period of time, then it's one thing to look at. Number two, do you need the money within the next period of time? And number three is, how much other money do you have? So if you're saying to me, this is an inheritance from my late mother for my children, my child is now 15. According to the will, I need to put it away. The child can only touch it in 5 years' time, and it can only be used for education. Then a five-year fixed rate bond all of a sudden starts to make sense. You don't need to watch the markets. You don't need to panic every time the politician said something not that clever. You don't need to have to worry about international oil prices, trade deficits, et cetera, et cetera. You know what you're getting. On the other extreme, if you're a much older person and you don't need X amount of money for 5 years, but you don't want to have heart palpitations over it, it's also a good idea. But if you are a person in your 20s or 30s, earning well, got money to invest, but want to have a portion that is worry-free, that you've earmarked for a particular thing like your kid's education, then it's something good to look at. But what are the downsides? The downsides are the opportunity costs that you could have lost out on. Had you put your money into an EFT that maybe took a broad look at different interest rate vehicles, or a vehicle that followed the index, an index tracker, over time we know how well they do. You could have put your money over there. But your attitude is, if I've got an 80-20 split, for example, 20 in that five-year bond, I don't need to worry about it. 80 in the market in different areas, then all of a sudden you've got peace of mind. The questions just come through. When is the right time to buy a government bond? So the answer, being sarcastic, is how long is a piece of string? But the answer is maybe a little bit more scientific. A government bond is linked to interest rates. So a higher interest rate environment will give you a better interest rate on a government bond or on a corporate bond, and vice versa. So if you want to get into a government bond or to a bond and you want to keep it there, then you need to try find the top of the interest rate cycle. Interest rate cycles are cyclical. We are now in a decreasing interest rate cycle. The reason for that is the government wants people to borrow money in order to start spending in order to boost the economy. When people start borrowing too much and spending too much, there's too much demand and not enough supply, inflation goes up. Because you and I are fighting over that car that is usually 150, but I'm prepared to pay 160 just to get it. Whereas a while ago, I just had to choose the color I wanted, and that was the price. But now, because there isn't enough supply, because so many people are able to get vehicle finance, we've got one car left, and you and I are going to go into a price war to try and get that vehicle. And that's what inflation basically is. So it's really looking at your milieu, your environment, your factors that affect how and where you want to put money away, and that will give you the return that you're looking for. There's something called nominal and real returns. And this, I think, is the last subject that I'll cover here today. We've got nominal returns, which is the returns that you get in the bank. And again, let's go back to simple maths. You put away 1,000 Rand, you get a 10% return on that money. In other words, 10% interest is applied to that 1,000 Rand. You will make 100 Rand. So you'll come out with 110 Rand at the end of that process. The challenge is, what happens to the buying power of my money? We just explained what inflation is. So let's take a loaf of bread. And again, I'm using fictitious figures. But if you could buy one, if you could buy 10 loaves of bread with your 100 Rand, would you be able to buy 11 loaves of bread in a year's time because you got 10% on that money, another 10 Rand, so to speak? And if the answer is no, you could only buy 9 loaves of bread with 110 Rand because the price of bread's gone up, then the question is, has your money really grown? There are more Rands in the bank, but the buying power of that money has decreased. I don't know how many of you have done a retirement scenario, something I love doing with clients, when you say to somebody in their 30s or 40s and you say, if you had to retire today, hypothetically, how much money would you need? And the discussion goes, well, the bond will be paid off and I've just bought a new car and I don't have to put the kids through school, et cetera, et cetera. I would need 50,000 Rand. And I say, okay, now let's see what 50,000 Rand is going to be in 30 years' time. In other words, how much money will buy the same bundle of goods that 50,000 Rand will buy now? And we show them an answer, and I hear I'm just thumb sucking, of 300,000 Rand. They look at you and say, you're mad. How did 50,000 become 300,000? Well, just think about your first salary check. Think about what you were earning 20 years ago, 10 years ago, what you could get by with. Today, you might not be able to pay your rates and taxes, lights and water, and all that junk with what you were earning originally. And that's why we need to look at nominal versus real returns. So your return is, if you're getting 10% on your money, but inflation increased that year by 6%, you only made a 4% real return. In other words, the buying power of your money only went up by 4%. And that's why keeping money in the bank over a long time tends to be corroded by inflation. You might see lots of numbers growing in the account. You might see the money growing, but you need to think, is that growth matching inflation? Am I able to have more money in order to buy the same stuff I could have bought before or better? And if the answer is no, then you need to look at it all over again and understand that your real return really needs to be better than the nominal return, less the inflation. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. It's exactly 20 minutes to one. And just to let you know that Bechev and Chai FM are giving you a chance to win tickets to see My Fair Lady. What is that? My Fair Lady is a musical with some of the most famous songs. Songs like I could have danced all night, The Rain in Spain, and Wouldn't It Be Lovely. So we are asking you to sing for your tickets. So what do you have to do? Choose a song, practice singing it, and then record it on your phone's WhatsApp. Husbands and fathers can enter on behalf of the ladies. Stay tuned to the Morning Mayhem on Friday morning when Howard Feldman asks you to send your voice notes and send it to the WhatsApp number 061-895-1019. 061-895-1019. Ladies, there are only a few tickets left. If you haven't yet secured your spot on My Fair Lady event at the Teatro in Monte Cassino on Thursday, the 27th of February, then you must visit johannesburghev.co.za and you can book your ticket there. The prize ticket is valid for the special ladies only performance on Thursday, the 27th of February, and cannot be redeemed for cash. If you or your family members have won on Chai FM in the last 90 days, unfortunately, you're not eligible to win again. Right. To come to the end of our show, I hope we've really unpacked the idea of where to put, how to invest with fixed investments. But just some ideas for you to take away and think about, that if the inflation environment is low, then you'll find that a positive return on an interest rate will give you a good return, a good real return. And vice versa, if the inflation is high, the interest rate tends to be corroded by the inflation and you end up not really making money. And really what you want to do is make sure that it grows from there. You can also make sure that you've got certain investments that move with the interest rate. So as the interest rate goes up, you'll earn a better rate. And if the interest rate moves down, you'll earn a rate not as high as you had before, but at least you have the option to move it. I hope I've unpacked it for you and given you a broad idea as to what it's all about. Just the last question quickly before I go. How can we mitigate against decreasing interest rates? In other words, if the interest rates are going down, what can you do? The answer is diversification. To make sure that you have investments in different areas that are able to give you a return with the risk profile that is suitable to you, but would most probably outperform the interest rate that you're getting, particularly if it's starting to decrease. There are a lot more questions coming through. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Craig, thank you for pushing the buttons. Everybody, thank you for listening. We will chat to you next week.